unconditional love. So I want you guys to think about unconditional love, right? So that's a pretty crazy concept. That means to love someone regardless of who they are, what they've been through, what they mean to you, what they've done to you, whether they're an enemy, a follower, somebody who's not, doesn't like you, right? However, that love says that you, or the person that you may be thinking about, that you love them or that you are loved at all times, no matter what. Now, I want you to compare that to time and numbers, something that we are constantly going through with sport. So whether it is stats for football, baseball, softball, rowing, doesn't matter, times for swimming, track, how high you jump, how fast you run, how fast you swim, whatever, you name it. Look at grades, scoreboards, likes, comments, how many you get, constantly defining us, telling us who we are, how good we are as a person, right? Now I want to tell you what God says about that. So take us to 1 Chronicles 21, and I'll give you a little backstory here. David was instructed by God when he was made king of Israel to never number the army of Israel. Now David, upon confronted by an enemy that was on the border of Israel, decided that he wanted to number the army of Israel because he wanted to see what he had to fight that enemy. And this made God very unhappy, because in his fear, David put the number, or put his army before God. He made an idol out of his army, out of his number. And rather than putting God first, this number became David's God. And God is a jealous God, but he's an all-loving and sovereign God. He wants our attention and our eyes on him at all points. And oftentimes, as athletes, as students, as a person, we can look to numbers to try and console us for our anxieties. So maybe you're struggling with something in your past, or you're struggling with something now, you look to your past to try and help that, or you look to the future and be like, all right, this is what I'm going to do to get better, be a better person. Yet Jesus does not call us to live that way. He calls us to live in each moment, day by day, not all at once. Matthew 6:34 says, therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Now, living for today and this moment is what God calls us to do. And we need to put our trust in God through prayer, that he will bless us tomorrow or even in the next moment. Paul says we are to be content in every situation, regardless of the situation, right? So when Paul wrote Philippians 4:12-13, he was actually in prison. Yet he said, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. And I've learned the secret of being content in every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, living in plenty or in want. 13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You see, when you let numbers define you, you set yourself up for failure. You set yourself up for disappointment, regardless of the result, whether it's good or bad. This brings us to my story. So last time I shared this, it's kind of, there were some tears. And it wasn't just like tears, it was like grown man ugly cry tears. So if that happens, I'm sorry. Bear with me. But I'll start with my childhood. So I grew up in North Carolina, or South Carolina. I moved to North Carolina when I was 18, so Carolina boy at heart. And I started swimming, or found my love for swimming when I was on 6. In fact, I loved swimming so much that I was cheering for one of my sisters during her race, and I actually fell into the pool. They had to pull me out, start the race over, and get the girls out of the water. And my coach ran over to my mom and was like, you know what, I think it's time that you get him in the pool, because I don't want him messing up the rest of my meets. So, yeah, that's partly where I found swimming. While swimming was a very pure and safe place for me, comparison managed to sink itself in there pretty quickly. And it became about what others thought about me rather than, you know, the love of the sport. And this kind of brings me to my family. So I grew up with 2 sisters, both of them are older, a loving mom, and what seems on the outside like a pretty normal dad. However, my dad has been diagnosed with several mental conditions, one of which my mom was told behind closed doors by a psychologist who's been practicing for about 30 years, said that my dad was the worst narcissist that he had ever met in his life. And on top of that, my dad has an acute form of autism called Asperger's. And to kind of put that in perspective, he also has a genius level IQ. So he's very good at hiding his mental condition, yet he views the world in a very different way that you and I view it. He views it in a way in which everything is about himself, and people use people as objects. So my mom, my sisters, and I, to my dad, were never viewed more than this mic stand. We were used for him to bring him glory, no matter what that meant for us. And unfortunately, that meant for me that I was constantly told I was never enough and that I had to get better and better. And regardless of the result, whether I won state championships when I was 12, there was always something wrong. I could never do enough. In fact, when I did wrong or I didn't win, fast forward a few months later, I managed to get second, which I thought was pretty good, in a race, and my dad actually grounded me. I was grounded because I didn't live up to my potential. I thought that was normal. I thought that life was normal like that. You know, you're supposed to be punished for not doing things correctly, and you know, you don't even really get a pat on the back when you do things well. I just thought I was supposed to get better. So this kind of takes me into swimming, right? I figured, you know what, I'm gonna do find something so great, I'm gonna do something so awesome that finally my dad will look at me and say he's proud of me, that he will pat me on the back and finally say, you know what, good job, son. So I decided that I wanted to become an Olympian. I wanted to get the gold medal. Maybe then my dad would look at me and say, that's my son. However, kind of growing up, that brought me a lot of pain because I was constantly seeking the approval of others rather than understanding the way God saw me and sees me. And the opinions of others became the foundation of my identity, and which kind of led me to never really find true happiness because I was constantly looking to others. Unfortunately, this also led to a lot of bullying. Got beat up a lot. Especially about older kids, just because I had a chip on my shoulder and I was trying to prove myself. And I figured this was pretty normal. However, my rock at this time was my mom. And that's really where I found love and saw God for the first time, as I saw it from my mom. And I really can't really understand unconditional love until you see somebody giving it to you, even though that brings them suffering. Because my mom had the worst. She had it the worst for my dad. And she had no one to lean on, even though I could lean on her. So this kind of brings me to Christ. When I was 13, I found Christ when I was 13. And I didn't really quite understand it. I had gotten baptized. I thought this was really cool, and really I kind of did it because I thought it would be something good for my swimming. I thought it would be something that I could use to apply to sport, and that, you know, maybe this God would allow me to, like, get love from my dad some way. And so I started pursuing my goal, which what I thought was what Christ or God wanted for me, and wanted to make Rio Olympics. And so we get to Olympic trials in 2016. I end up qualifying for the finals, which is, you know, the top 8 swimmers in the nation. You're gunning it out for 2 spots. And this race happened to be, if not the closest, one of the closest races at trials. I ended up finishing 6th. However, I finished 6th by about 3/10 of a second from first and second. And I remember touching the wall and just kind of shocked, you know, not really understanding what had happened, but just kind of realizing, like, okay, this is 4 years of training, I didn't really understand why he would allow this, because I had never been able to get any love from my father at any point. And I figured that, of course, he would maybe allow this one moment for me to make the team, and finally my dad would look at me and say that he loved me. But I just didn't understand why he would allow it. And it was at this time that I was about to come to Cal. I was transferring to Cal, and I figured this would be a good start, get a new start, new life change. Yet I was still really angry at God, and within the first couple weeks at Cal, I was taking a couple philosophy classes, and I decided that, you know what, if God allows all this pain and anguish in my life, then, and all these people are telling me that he's not real, and logically it makes sense, then you know what? Believe in you, God. And I remember having a conversation with myself and being like, you know what, God, you're not real. And I decided to stick with that for the entire year, or at least that semester and the next semester. And unfortunately, this kind of led to me having this feeling which I could never be content. Like, I had a hole, couldn't fill it. And really, that year was probably one of the hardest years of my life. I get to Cal. First week, I want to come compete, you know, for Cal. I'm drawn on to Cal because I want to contribute points for the NCAAs. And within my first week, I get hit by a car and end up breaking my arm. I'm in a cast for 8 weeks, and immediately I'm taken off of that idea of being able to contribute to the team, and I'm looked, or at least the way I view myself is, I'm nothing, I can't do anything, I can't fulfill the purpose that I was brought here to do. What is there? And so I keep trying, I keep training, you know, whatever, I'll make it through this will happen. And 2 weeks after I get my cast off, I end up getting hit by another car while I was riding a motorcycle. And sprain my left wrist, and to get a hairline fracture on one of my lower vertebrae. Something I kind of just shrugged off at this point. I figured, you know what, whatever. The worst has already happened. I'm just going to keep moving forward. And we'll just try and make the best of it. So we get to NCAAs, the biggest meet in a college swimmer's career. And we're slated to win, or at least we're predicted to win against Texas. And we've had, if you guys don't know Cal Swimming, we've had a pretty good rivalry with Texas for the past 4 years, and of course. And so we're slated to win. I'm supposed to score in my events, and first event right off the bat, I get disqualified. We get to my second event, we make it to finals. I get disqualified. There's an announcer over the loudspeaker saying that I was disqualified. And so this really started hurting. Like, this started taking a lot out of me, and I actually remember shedding a few tears in that pool deck, just because it wasn't only that I had hurt myself, but what hurt the most was that I had hurt my teammates, that I had kept them from winning because of my failures and my mistakes. And that is probably one of the most painful things of all, is when you not only hurt yourself, but when you hurt others. So that entire year, you know, because of these injuries, because of the things that happened, I really just kind of learned to shut myself down, shut myself off, and just keep myself secluded, because I figured, you know what, like, I need to fix myself before I can, you know, help contribute to the team. But really, that only led to me being lonely and without any companions. I had, at this point, still angry at God, I had ditched God. In fact, I was more angry at God than I had been after Olympic trials, after NCAAs. It was also at this point that my family was going through a lot of hardship and a lot of struggle. I hadn't heard from my mom in about a month, even though I had reached out to her time and time again. And there was a point after this NCAAs where I hadn't gotten a text for about 2 weeks from anybody. And during this year, and kind of leading up to that moment, I started facing a little bit of depression, which just kind of started getting a little bit worse, a little out of control, right? And So this 2 weeks where no one texted me, I was angry, I was sad, I was lonely, I was depressed. Didn't really have anybody to talk to, even though I tried to reach out. And I had started realizing that the only thing I could do to others was bring pain to them and hurt in their lives. And I figured, you know what? This is kind of the point where I decided that suicide might be the best option. And, you know, it wasn't just a, like, immediate decision. I decided that it was logical. I was like, you know what? I'm not pitting myself here. I think that this is smart, because if all I can do is ever bring pain to somebody or people in my life, then what's the point of living at all? And so I took 2 weeks to think about it. And after those 2 weeks, that thought of suicide just continued to grow. And it just sounded more and more logical and better and better. And so I decided that I was going to do it. And I decided that it was time to try and figure out how to do it in which I could be the least amount of burden to the people around me. And once I had figured that out, I decided it was a good idea to just wait 24 hours. Give it 24 hours, let's figure out, you know, if this I really want to do, if I still want to, you know, do it, or if nothing really happens, and we're going to do it. And it was at this point that I decided, you know what? If this whole God thing is real, then I'm pretty much screwed if I die tomorrow and I don't know him. Because if I end up meeting him as my creator, then I'm going to hell. So I decided to pray. And I just prayed a really simple prayer, but it was the most honest and genuine prayer I've ever prayed. And it was, Lord, if you're real, I need you to show me. That was it. So going back, I hadn't received a text in 2 weeks, right? Within the next 8 to 10 hours, I had received 12 to 15 texts, all saying, hey, hope you're doing okay. I felt like I needed to pray for you. I hope you're doing all right. Like, I hope everything's okay. I get another one. Hey, I felt like God told me that I needed to reach out for you. I've been praying for you. I hope you're doing okay. And finally, I hadn't heard from my mom in a month, right? Finally, she reached out to me. It's like, hey, like, I've been going through a lot. I hope you're doing okay. I'd love to talk to you and hear how you're doing. And at this point, and it's at this point that, or now I realize why she hadn't been texting me. She had been dealing with a lot of health with my dad. So all of this kind of coming in, and I'm just overwhelmed. I'm like, are you serious? Like, I haven't heard from anybody in 2 weeks, and now I pray this prayer, and I'm getting all these texts, and people telling me that they're praying for me, and I'm just like, okay, God, you're real. You're real. There's just no logical explanation for this. And it's just at this point where things just started to change, and I decided, you know what, it's time. I'm going to give my life to Christ. Really, truly, I'm going to pursue it. And my life changed, and within a few weeks and months, it just continued to change. That was actually 2 weeks after that point is when I got introduced to AIA, and met some of the most loving people I've ever met in my life. And so I'm here to tell you, and my story, I feel like God's brought me through all this so I can tell you that you are enough. You have always been enough, and you will always be enough. Oftentimes, our own opinions of ourselves are derived from some sort of fear, and fear of acceptance, fear of love, really, that we must be lovable to others. But trying and striving to be lovable only takes away from us being able to love others. And Jesus' opinion of you is very different, okay? Philippians 2:15 says that you will shine among them like the stars in the sky. Matthew says that you are the light of the world, a town built on a hill that cannot be hidden. It says that the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Ephesians, we are his workmanship. God prepared you beforehand. He prepared the way. He prepared you. You are a piece of art. You are a work of art. And Romans says that nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. No trouble, hardship, persecution, famine, nakedness, danger, or sword. John says, for God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. is now that even in my deepest, darkest moments that I really realize how much you love me, still loves me, and how much he loves you, no matter what you're going through, it doesn't matter. Kevin Knox was speaking last week, he actually mentioned this, but you know, he's talking about God and saying that you are never more loved than in this moment right now. Fast forward to this second, you are never more loved in this moment either, or in this moment. In every single moment of your life, all the way up until your death and until your time in heaven with your Heavenly Father, you are never more loved. You will always be loved. And that is what Jesus did for you, right? And that's why he lives for you now, to love you, to love us. And that's how much God loves you. In fact, he loves you so much that he's, every time we breathe, every time we speak, that very air that we speak, we're speaking his name. Yahweh in translation is actually just a breath. Yahweh, the name for God, it's just translated into. Every time we breathe, every time we speak, God is with us. We are always with God. All we have to do is reach out to him. So what is keeping you from acknowledging God, from Yahweh as your personal creator, as the God of the universe, that he gave his only son for you? You from hell. Ephesians says that even upon this, that you will be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that you will become a new man or woman, which was created according to God in true righteousness and holiness. Not only do you get the gift of salvation, but you get to become a new person, the person that God has made you to be, the person that he wanted or intended you to be. You will always be loved, and again, you are enough. You will always be enough. You are enough.